Every time I see my dad now, who now I'm closer with than ever, he always goes, oh, I'll tell you more, but you're going to go on a podcast and talk about it.
When I hear Beetlejuice, it's all I think about is that chick like jerking off the right. guy.
But the question is, did she make the cum or did he make the cum or did Beetlejuice make the cum? Not today.
So we are lucky enough to, because of the life we've lived, we've had some friends in show business. And when you have friends in show business, you go to a play to see them, or you go to a concert because they're a musician, and you go, and they go, oh, come backstage after. And I always go, ugh, like, I don't want to go backstage because I don't belong there.
Yeah.
And the fear is like somebody's going to be like, hey, you don't belong here. And then you're like, oh my God.
The worst feeling.
You know, you spotted me. You know I don't belong here. So we went to see Christina P. at the Mothership, and we go, and they go, come backstage after. So we go backstage after. I turn right into the back room, and Tony Hinchcliffe is sitting on the couch, and he pops up so fast, like instantly, and starts walking towards me, and I'm like, Tony Hinchcliffe is about to fucking tell us to get out of here. We don't belong here. I'm like, this is going to be so whack. I'm like, why did I do it? I knew I shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
And the opposite happened.
I have never been more excited to hang out with two people. Like, ever. Ever. I was in LA for 20 years. I've met literally all my biggest artistic inspirations, Tarantino, Roger Waters of Pink Floyd, all of these monsters. I've met them all. I've been able to manifest absolute an insane life. But you two are so special to me that it is insane. I literally feel like we grew up together, even though we didn't, but it's crazy. I could go on and on and on. But
that's what we're here for.
We'll take turns or something here.
Yeah. No, let's
but
go.
I could literally
Please.
Just flow. So,
but, well, before you flow, let me just say, like, you're the real deal, though, because you were so kind. But then we were like, you know, put it out there, like, you should come on our podcast, you know, which is like such a douchey thing to do. Like, I almost hated it when it came out of my mouth. But literally, it was less than a week ago, and here you are. That's so nice of you.
Yeah, and I don't even do people's podcasts.
I'm sure.
It's not even a thing. But
here you are.
Only Rogan's.
When you showed up here, you were like, I've been here five times because I did Danny Brown, I did Dr. Dre,
right.
I did YMH.
Well, that's a little bit different. But
of course.
And it's here, so it's the only thing. And I love Danny, and I never got to hang out with... I used the Dr. Drew episode as like an actual doctor, like an actual therapy session.
Right.
Yeah.
You don't do stranger. You don't do people you've known for one day's podcast.
Exactly.
We appreciate it.
Yes, we do.
But I mean, it's absolutely wild because I always assumed you guys filmed in LA just because actors and actresses or New York or whatever. I never guessed that you guys were here in Texas with us. And it's just nuts. I watch The Sopranos. I'm not kidding. And it makes me sound crazy. Almost every single day of my life. It's what I keep on in the background. It's what I watch if I want to lounge. And it's funny because I literally will like open up Netflix and go, ugh, and I'll open up HBO and see what's new. And it's just right there. Do you want to continue watching? That continue watching thing in the corner. It's like, you know what? I will watch an episode of The Sopranos 5,000 times before I have any interest in watching anything else. And another crazy thing is that I always find something new.
That's cool.
It's nuts. That David Chase is something else.
Insane. When did you first watch it?
As soon as it came out.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So you're like our age, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So you were like 13 or 14 and you were hooked right away.
Yes. And was totally relating to it because both of my parents dabbled when I was younger in organized crime. And so it was the only thing relatable. Youngstown is right between Chicago and New York where I'm from. And it became a huge mafia hub, huge, because the two families would meet there and Al Capone set up shop there and a whole bunch of huge crime families. And
I want to watch a show about your life.
I know.
You better be making that show.
That's exactly what Dr. Drew said when I was in the same spot one time.
Wow.
So like not only was it entertaining like it would be for anybody else, but it was literally like the only thing that was anything like my family or any relating to the things, like, you know.
You can't watch like Step by Step. Exactly. Yeah, when they're all like, hey, Billy, right. Like, what are you? Yeah, and you're like, right. No, I need to watch people get like shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was also interesting because my mom was the, wasn't the family mom. My mom was the woman on the side in my dad's mafia relationship, and she got pregnant with me. So you can imagine what that would have done. Exactly.
Wow.
Boom.
What a G.
So it was not
that,
only...
I mean, that's a great... For one of your tours or something, like Tony Hinchcliffe, yeah. Son of the Gumad.
Yeah. Ugh. Exactly.
Oof,
right.
Son of the Gumad. That's a great line.
Absolutely.
The title of the show.
Yeah.
Son of the Gumad.
But in Italian?
Yeah, how do you say son?
Ooh,
I don't know.
We don't know. Good. We should know, but we don't.
Yeah. Oh, Zolo's on it. Nice.
But so, like, not only was it relatable to me, it was also kind of like looking in to see what the other family that I didn't know about was doing and what that was like.
Wow.
You know? So it was kind of just, it was life. It was everything.
So the show was spot on.
It was unbelievable.
Wow.
I mean, it's unbelievable. It was like, I literally feel like I grew up with you guys. And a lot of the stuff that happens, you know, you in the, it's crazy that you guys, I guess, don't or haven't watched the show. It's fucking nuts.
I haven't seen like any of it. She watched during COVID. She watched almost all of it, right?
I watched up to season 5.
That's absolutely crazy. How do you stop there?
I don't know. I had two kids. I have two kids.
No, I know.
I got busy.
Because you were saying as it got to where like you looked like yourself and an adult, it got harder, right?
Yes.
Where it was like, yes. Oh, because like when you're watching yourself as a kid, you're like, oh, that. But then when you see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You see, for me, a lot of it, like there's a lot of reasons I don't watch, but it's like my memory of the show is perfect.
Right.
Like my, I mean, not that my memory of it is perfect. I look back on it and I go, oh, that was perfection. Like. The people, the time, everything was great. And I would hate to ruin my image of it by watching it and being like, oh, I hate this. Why did they use this? I'm doing this. And I hate watching
but
myself.
But you wouldn't.
Yeah,
and that's what I thought,
it's
too.
The greatest show of all
but
time.
But I've seen like clips before and I'm like, oh, I get so, like even when you're sitting here complimenting the show, even though like I had nothing to do with the show, I feel uncomfortable. You know what I mean? Like it's too... Like, I don't know. I'm used to, like, you know, growing up in New York City where people are like, you're a fucking idiot. And you're like, oh, okay, good. Now I can chill. Like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, you feel like watching yourself compliment. I don't know. And also, I like that when people ask me about the show, I can say, I don't know.
Right. Like you can that. Just end the conversation.
Yeah. Or just like, I don't have to give them, when they're like, in season 3, episode 5, when he said this, I'm like, I don't know what the hell you're talking about. Like, I don't remember.
Yeah. Well, see, when I rewatched it for what I watched, I forgot so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I really enjoyed, and I feel like I waited 20 years to watch it, that I was able to enjoy it as much as I could as an audience member, because there was so much distance and so much had been forgotten that it was the first time where I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I know everybody said it's the greatest show, but like, oh, I get it. It's a really fucking good show.
Oh, it's unbelievable.
And it's really funny.
Yeah.
It's
hilarious.
Really funny.
It's
Tony Sirico's the funniest guy ever.
Oh yeah.
Tony Pulley Walnuts.
What's your favorite episode?
There's so I can't even rank. Well, I mean, actually, I think everybody, at least like 80% of the people that I've talked to would say that the
Pine Barrens.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I mean, it's just too good. Tony Sirico and Michael Imperioli at their absolute fucking best. I don't know what they were doing or what was going on, but it just you feel like you're out there in the freezing cold with them when he loses his shoe, when they're eating the ketchup packets.
Yeah.
David Chase just had a way of making you feel like you were there a lot. And I look at all these things. I was watching the other day, and like there's a part where Tony's at a normal appointment with Dr. Melfi, and they're talking about something deep. And he says something, and the camera's on him, and then it goes to Melfi, who does nothing. And then back to Tony, who does nothing. And then back to Melfi, who does nothing. And then back to Tony, who says something else. And it's like, they used all of these amazing techniques to make you think that something's about to happen.
Yes, all of this.
And he
never tried to make, I think one of the genius things about David is that he never ever tried to make any character look good, sound good, be good. You know what? It was almost like the opposite. Like he was trying to make you the most human and flawed person that's ever spoken.
Yeah. Well, it's so interesting to find out that, you know, that they casted so many like normal humans from New Jersey and everything.
Well, Tony Sirico had done like jail time. Like he was a legit. And that's like when people say like, I wish I could have met James Gandolfini. I'm like, yeah, you know, you would have loved him. He's so nice to me. When people say like, I wish I could have met Tony Sirico. I'm like, you did.
Yeah.
Like that you watched 80 hours of his life. Like that was him. He was never... We were, so one of my favorite stories about him, we were at a charity event one time, and there's, I don't know, 100 tables at like, I think it was at that, where we saw that picture, like the Marriott.
Yeah.
And there's so many people, and there's somebody on stage, and they're giving this like heartfelt speech about how many lives you save or whatever. And he sees like five tables over, someone's pouring wine, and he starts going like this, like snapping, and he's going, oh! Oh! And now like slowly, like heads are start turning, and they're like looking at him, and he's like, oh! And find the person from five tables away, like somebody gets the person pouring the wine. He goes like this to come over. They come all the way over. He doesn't say a word to them. He just points at his cup like this, and they start filling it up. And right when it gets like 75% of the way through, he goes like this. And he just turns his pinky up like that.
Oh, my God.
They stop pouring. He takes the cup and just continues to look at the person on stage giving a speech. And I was like, everything with him
my
is this scene from the show.
Yeah. My
like,
favorite.
And then so we would do like the Emmy Awards and the SAG Awards and whatever. He lit up a cigarette in the SAG Awards at the ceremony. Like when they're giving away, all of a sudden in the middle of the room, you just saw a cloud of smoke. And he was like smoking a Marlboro Light.
Yep.
We were the misfits at all of the award shows.
Oh, yeah.
Always.
We stood out like sore thumb. Like,
you damn well you should have.
We did.
You
we
were
did.
America's goddamn fucking Italian children. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And in the show, and since I have to tell you guys this because you're nuts and you haven't watched the greatest show of all time that you guys were on, Tony Sirico in the show gets arrested and is in prison in Youngstown, Ohio, where I'm from. So that's another connector. And separate from that, he once shot an Italian something, some side independent movie or something in Youngstown. And my dad and some other real, you know, Italians were around and they're excited to be hanging out with Tony Sirico from, you know, Goodfellas and Sopranos. I don't know if it was before or after Sopranos. But anyway, he goes, does anybody have a Marlboro Light? My dad told me this story. He was there. He goes, does anyone have a Marlboro Light? And some guy's like, I have a Camel Light. He goes, did I fucking ask for a Camel Light? Holy shit.
Yeah.
Yep. That
I remember
right.
I was like, at the point where I was smoking cigarettes with the guys, like, you know, because at first I was 12 years old and they were treating me like a kid.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden it was like 15, 16. I start drinking and they're like, oh, I don't know. And then by like 18, 19, 20, it was like, oh, you're just one of the guys. Like, I remember at some age in there, we're outside and I lit a match to light a cigarette. And then I went to like hold it to him and he looked at me like I was banging a dude in the ass. Like, and he looked at me and he goes, let me tell you something. He goes, a real man always lights his own match. And I've had that in my head.
Oh, yeah.
Forever. And I've never heard anyone else say that. Right. I remember that with him. And I remember, like, I passed that look on. Yeah. Like, because there were times where I was 25 and somebody held a match to me. And I'm like, are you fucking stupid? Like, you know, like, I'm like, are you fucking, like, all of a sudden I'm just like, fuck it. But yeah, I had some morals that were, you know, he was the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nuts. Do you guys do you guys still stay in touch with any of the old people?
Yeah.
Do you guys ever talk with David Chase at all in any way, shape or form?
When we shot the commercial was the Super Bowl commercial we did last year. Was it last year?
Two years ago maybe.
Was the first that I had seen him in a couple of years. He's very quiet.
I'd imagine so.
Yeah. It wasn't like, there weren't a lot of conversations.
Right. What if I asked you to ask him a question? That's impossible, right?
We can try.
Okay. So here's the question that I've wanted to know forever. And again, sorry to any non-Sopranos fans that are watching me nerd out right now.
Is he the only guy who would know this, you think?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. And it's not the stupid how does it end question.
Of course.
But something that I noticed is that when... Tony goes to kill Tony Blundetto, the great and powerful
Steve Buscemi.
Van Morrison is playing in the car and over real life. And then we find out that it's in the car as the car is pulling up to the farmhouse where he's hiding out. And Tony Soprano kills his cousin, Tony Blundetto. and Van Morrison is playing. And when Tony Soprano and Christopher Moltisanti, Michael Imperioli, are in, Michael's driving the car, which flips and rotates. It's a cover of Comfortably Numb from Pink Floyd. But the version that's playing is Roger Waters with Van Morrison singing David Gilmour's parts.
Oh, well, you really do watch the show.
Like a freaking, like I'm a freak. Yeah. I literally watched two episodes while I had nothing to do. The night that I met you guys, that morning, I literally had nothing to like wake up for. So I was just like rolling around in bed and I had the Sopranos on and was watching you guys fucking growing up right there in front of me. Anyway, so my question would be, and I would bet you, because I only really noticed this in the past year or two, and it's been bugging the hell out of me. I'll bet you I'm the first person to even make this connection. But for some reason, Van Morrison is playing when Tony kills his cousin Tony and when Tony kills his cousin Christopher. And I want to know, why did David Chase make it so that Van Morrison is playing? My theory is that he maybe killed a cousin in his actual life and Van Morrison was playing in the background or something
that
close
David
to that.
David actually might have killed a cousin?
I'm just kidding. But
see, you tell me sometimes that I have too much time on my hands because I always come up with these like weird fantastical, yeah. But that's one where it's like,
Rob, you having too much time in your hands is asking me who makes cum, the person jerking it or the penis. He's asking much deeper question.
Right, but I'm saying here he's like, I'm the only person that ever noticed this about Sopranos. You know what I mean? That's a lot.
I agree.
But he has a lot of time to think, which I respect.
I did know that David is very into music and very specific, and he made every decision when it came to the music that was chosen.
As am
for the
I
show.
Obsessed with music all the way through and the Sopranos, as is he. And I know for a fact it's the only two times that Van Morrison appears in the entire fucking
series.
So then, series.
For sure, you're onto something. So yeah. For sure.
So, and also, anybody who doesn't know, the guy who played Silvio is Little Stevie from Springsteen's E Street Band. Yeah. And like, Stevie is like a music aficionado. Yeah. He has a show on Sirius, everything. So he would work with David with the music. So I don't think anything is a mistake.
No.
Right.
No,
like
so
there
you
can't
up
be
up
any
there.
Coincidences. And he's killing his cousin in both. It's not like, oh, they're both driving scenes or, oh, they're killing somebody.
No.
He's literally killing his own cousin at the times in which Van Morrison is playing.
I didn't even know that Tony killed Steve Buscemi on the show.
What? Oh, wow. Until right now?
Yeah. I know that Tony killed Christopher, though.
Well, how do you know that?
How do I know? Because I remember, like, besides the traveling, like, to the shows, my favorite part of doing the show was we would have read-throughs.
Yeah.
And, like, every 2 weeks, everybody
would sit
around.
Because that
would
be one of the only times we would all be together.
Right. We'd be in, like, pajamas. Like, you show up like this. You sit around. They would have sandwiches and fucking sodas. And we'd be outside smoking cigarettes and you're bullshitting and you're talking. And that was when you could, you know, there was no work really involved. You just show up. You have your script in front of you and everybody reads it. And there were people like, you know, Lorraine Bracco, where we never had scenes with her, but we were on a show with her for 10 years.
Right.
So everybody thought like, oh, you must be hanging with Lorraine all the time. And it's like, we've never been on set at the same time.
Right.
But you get these times where you spend time together and you hang out. And I remember like, there were certain moments you remember from the read-throughs. And I remember like the eeriness of like, I remember because you read the lines and then somebody else is there and they go, Tony holds his mouth over Christopher. Tony holds his hand over Christopher's mouth.
Oh my
Christopher
God.
Christopher takes his last breath. And then, like, turns the page, and then you're all sitting
and
there, and
the,
you're like...
And by the end, they stopped giving us full scripts by the last season or two. And so a lot of the times, we would find out at read-throughs, like, what happens.
Because people would leave their script in, like, their jacket, and then lose their jacket, and then people would be like, oh, we have the fucking script from Sopranos and whatever thing. Oh. And then, it was a lot of... It was the read-throughs were the best.
The best. Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Did we annoy you as much as fans sometimes tell me, like, Meadow and AG were so fucking annoying?
No.
Really? You can be honest.
These people, they complain about anything nowadays.
But even when the show was just airing, they
hate
it. And
hate
I understand why you hate my character, but I feel like for you, it would be less likely because that was you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're like, oh, I can't. Yeah. Was there shit that happened?
I mean, I'm Anthony.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. You're not going to be like, I hate that
every
kid.
Every Tony is an Anthony.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, and my dad's, I mean, stupid, but my dad's middle name was Anthony. His father was an Anthony. So I'm technically almost a fucking Anthony Jr.
Right.
Wow. And the same exact age as you. We're like a year apart.
Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm watching.
Holy shit.
Yeah. Yeah. But now, not annoying. If anybody was annoying... there wasn't. Everybody plays their role so well. I'm a fan of like villains. So the people that were annoying were supposed to be annoying.
Yeah. Yeah.
You guys were
who
great.
I'm still really close with is who I talked to a lot is Vince Curatola, who played Johnny Sack. And he's just like, he's so fucking good.
Yeah.
He's so good. And the way just ever, even
he's an actor
in real life. Like when we're, you know, we go out to dinner and just the things that he does are just so fucking.
Everyone was very unique.
Yeah.
Very specific and unique. Yes.
Well, I mean, I know it's hard to say this in a world where everybody diversity is everything and this and that, but Italians are the fucking best. Sorry to say it.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, haters.
You know what too though? When I went back watching the show, especially now in the world that we live in and cancel culture and everybody being so careful at what they say and look. In many ways, I understand we need to bring certain things to light, and I'm in support of that. But, like, we were portraying and depicting people and the way they speak and the way they think, and people are so afraid to do that anymore, and that's shitty.
Right.
Like, when I rewatched it, I was like, oh, my God, nobody would make this show anymore. Nobody, people will be so afraid, but this is how these people think and speak and talk, and there's nothing wrong with representing that. Mm-hmm.
I know it was a different era. I mean, you cannot be that creative anymore.
No.
I always call it the Beetlejuice effect. Like, they couldn't make the Beetlejuice now. No, there's right. It would be so watered down by executives. They would go, why would anybody be interested
that
in
that? Congresswoman would be jerking somebody off
yeah.
in it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. What? I guess. Yeah.
You know, the congresswoman who jerked someone off at the Beetlejuice show.
Oh, I got to rewatch Beetlejuice.
Nancy Boebert or some shit.
Right.
She, like,
Lauren Boebert.
She jerked some guy off.
In the
like,
movie?
No.
It was like a play of yeah. Beetlejuice.
Oh, you took oh, my. Yeah. I was talking about the movie,
like,
but
I don't remember no, I know, that I know, part.
Anytime there's a chance to add someone getting jerked off, I'm catching on to your Robert. Style.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have to because now the, when I hear Beetlejuice, that's all I think about is that chick like jerking off
right.
the guy. Oh, and
but the question is, did she make the cum or did he make the cum or did Beetlejuice make the cum? Because technically, it's
he inspired
that
it.
That is Beetlejuice is a good word for cum.
Wow. We're back here again, aren't we?
Don't say it three times, Jamie. You don't know what's going to happen. Was there shit that happened in your life and you were like, and then you saw it on Sopranos and you were like, that's exactly.
Well, I had a teacher back in the day, Mr. Gilmartin. I'm pretty sure he's dead now, so I can talk about this.
R.I.P.
But I was making a joke because I was, as you can imagine, an insane class clown, nonstop. Always in trouble, always signing a conduct card, everything, every fucking day. And so the teachers hated me, and Mr. Gilmartin really hated me. He felt like he wanted to teach me a lesson. So anyway, one day I was making a joke, a blatant joke with all my buddies about, yeah, my dad jerked me off the other night, something like that. And he goes, oh, he did? I go, no, I'm kidding. He goes, no, you know what? You said that. You're going to learn today, my buddy. And so... he goes to the principal and says, Tony made a, well, he didn't, I think he's, I don't know if he said that I made a joke about it. But anyway, he goes, Tony said that his dad jerked him off. We have to call children's services. And let me remind you, my dad and me, it was a secret thing. Like I wasn't supposed to go around town and tell people who my dad was or anything like that. Right. Well, that either. But it was, you know, I was the secret and I was fine with that. It you know, probably psychologically affected me a little bit being a secret kid.
That he wasn't your dad or that he was in the crime syndicate?
Well, he was in that and that, but it was like a secret kind of. It wasn't like my dad is blah, blah, blah.
Right.
Wow.
I have a different last name than my dad. I took the last name of the husband that was, my mom wanted me to have the same name as my brothers and sisters that were much older than me, but with the different dad that she was married to, even though they weren't whatever. You know, you just didn't get divorced back then. I'm sure you guys have heard about this.
Yeah.
Like you just lived in, you just
age.
Had separate bedrooms, but you didn't get divorced. And my dad was going through the same thing, separate bedrooms from his wife and just banging my mom. for 11 years, by the way, until I was made. So they had like a super secret romance. Anyway, so Mr. Gilmartin wanted to make a fucking stink, not realizing what he was dealing with. So he has the principal call Children's Services. They track down who my dad was and call him. And, you know, my dad basically is like, I'm sure he was making a fucking joke. What are you guys talking about? But this Mr. Gilmartin applied the pressure, blah, 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 blah. Long story short, oh, man, it's crazy. But he wasn't a teacher there much longer. And my mom and I are at the grocery store a few months later, and he's stacking cantaloupes in the produce section of the grocery store. His new job, wearing the apron and not seeming happy. And it's very much like the, again, I can't believe you guys haven't seen the fucking show.
Yeah.
But there's a guy that gave Tony a ticket, and he ends up working in like a gardening.
Yes. Whoa.
And you see the guy. Can I give you my picture
and resume to play your mom in the show? Like, oh my God, this is crazy.
Oh, it goes on and on and on. That's just the first one I thought of. I mean, if I sat down and really thought about it, I could go on and on and on. You, your character, like figuring it out, and you telling him, like, you don't know. I have an older sister who literally had that conversation with me. Like, you can't talk about it. It's a thing.
Oh, wow.
It's our own thing. You can talk with me about it, but you can't talk with other people about it. But yeah, your dad makes money doing illegal things. It's gambling. And just like you do, it's like you're not blowing it up. It's normal to us. It's like, it's just what everybody else is doing in their jobs and businesses. But, you know, it's technically illegal. It's just a government scam so that they can blah, blah, blah. Like, it's literally your perspective.
Did you ever go like, is this show based off of us? Like, did you ever think like, is this us? Like, did you ask your dad or anybody? Like,
yeah, but they always downplay it, just like on the show, you know? So it's like, no, I don't do that, blah, blah, blah. I told this story on Your Mom's House, because when I first did Your Mom's House with Tom and Christina, you guys will appreciate this, I literally, for some reason, because I'm a stoner and I don't listen to anybody's podcast, I thought if you went on there, you were supposed to talk about your mom.
Right.
So I talked about my mom. It ended up being just a massive, like, this was like 7 years ago, but it was like a big deal back then. People were like, you know, Gina, this and that, because I was telling them little mob stories because my mom ran numbers. That was like her child support. So instead of my dad like giving her money, he let her run an entire branch.
Holy shit.
Yeah, an entire branch of the thing, running numbers. So it's like an illegal lottery, blah, 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 blah. So it ended up being like this hit thing where people are like, because we asked my mom, we ended up calling into my mom called in the second time I did the show. And Tom goes, so let's just say, and she's a sweet old lady now. She's out of the business. She's 76. So like, I've taken it upon myself to kind of vent this thing, even though every time I see my dad now, who now I'm closer with than ever, he always goes, oh, I'll tell you more, but you're going to go on a podcast and talk about it. But anyway, it's the last time when my mom called in on Your Mom's House the second time that I did it, because she was like a hit by that point, Tom goes, so what if I didn't have the money for you, like, on the due date? Like, let's say the due date's Tuesday, so let's go through it on the phone call. Let's make believe. She goes, okay, let's do it. He goes, hey, Gina, I don't have the money. I won't have the money for you on Tuesday, but I'll have it for you on Wednesday. And there's like this like long 5 second pause. And she goes, there's no such thing as Wednesday. And they fucking lose their minds. Yeah.
Oh, she's such a badass.
There's no such thing as Wednesday. But anyway, talking about how things are relatable, also on that episode, I talked about how my dad told me that he was out completely. I talked with him that night at his restaurant. This is years ago. And he goes, I don't even do any of that stuff anymore. That was back in the day, and it was nothing. There's nothing going on. And on cue, this is a true fucking story. And Red Band and a couple of my old podcast buddies were there when this happened. A guy walks in with a newspaper and literally goes, "The really good news today, really good news today." And you can see
the money,
cash hanging out of the end of this rolled up newspaper. You just stacks of cash through it, bundled up and hanging out of the end. The news was good today. It's like, oh yeah, you're totally out. Totally, totally a legal operation.
Do you remember the first time you sniffed something that you were like, my family's, something's going on, something's different?
Well, what's crazy is that I found out really, really early on. They lied for a long time, like up until maybe when I was, I can't remember the exact, 7, 8, 9, 10, somewhere in there. They lied. They said that my dad just worked a lot. That's why he only visited once a month or twice a month or whatever. And then I noticed when my school bus would pick up my one buddy, Jeff Lewis, across the street, I noticed a car that looked a lot like my dad's car that I would be waiting for and excited to see when he would come visit. And then, and it's crazy because I was so young, we'll just say 10, which was like the old side of, but it was, it may have been earlier. I matched the license plate. I memorized his license plate, or at least the first couple letters or whatever, from when I saw it. Because I'm like, I want to see, because that looks a lot like the car across the street from Jeff's house. So I matched the license plate up, and I confronted my mom with it one day after school. I go, you know, I noticed that Dad's car is parked directly across the street from Jeff Lewis's house. And she knew that my dad wasn't a truck driver or whatever they told me up until that point. She knew that he lived about 8 blocks away, you know, dick, 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 right across from Jeff Lewis. And she goes, okay, all right, we're going to have a talk. And she called up Lori, my older sister, and it was the two of them and me in my mom's bedroom. She's posted up, sitting up at a, you know, 90 degree angle on the bed, Lori in the chair over there, me on this little bench at the end of the bed. And to their credit, they explained everything to me. Perhaps it was too young for it to happen. Perhaps it was too late. But they basically explained, like, okay, so everything we told you was a lie. You were Italian, you know, you're super Italian, and here's how this culture works. Your dad was married. I was technically married, but we weren't in love with the people that we were married to. And sometimes this happens and that happens, but he's connected with something, you know. They tried to, like, you know, it was a lot, but I like didn't fully get it, but they explained it to me young. They're like, okay, let's just go all the way honest. That was her plan. Which is, I guess, was good. Yeah.
I like it.
The show is like life for me because it really is a comedy. The Sopranos is a drama disguised, or it's a comedy disguised as a drama. Yeah. It's hysterical. The entire, every part of it. Like, there's not an episode
where... And
because
we shot it like a drama, I think that's why it... You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, there was never an ounce of us ever trying to be funny.
Right. And with my stand-up, as corny as this sounds, it's kind of like the same thing. You know, it's The Sopranos and Tarantino is the artwork in my place. It's the... it's kind of like my, not brand, but it's just my sense of humor because it's serious, 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 which disguises the punches. So you don't, so when something funny happens, which, you know, these Tarantino films are hilarious, right? But it's, but
it means Casino, Goodfellas is fucking hilarious. But then there are, what's crazy is there's people who watch Joe Pesci kicking the guy on the floor and you're laughing with your boys and there's some people who are like, why are you laughing? Like, this is so crazy. And they do, it's wild that you get, you're watching the scene and people get completely different things from it.
And the best is always, in my opinion, you know, disguised like that. It's you know, hidden. You don't see it coming. It's serious, serious, serious. Boom. And those are the best laughs because, you know, it's, it surprises you. Sometimes we forget that laughter is like a surprise emotion. Something can be really funny and it doesn't make you laugh. You're just like, God, that's hilarious.
That's why grandmas are the funniest and grandpas like that. Like, grandpas are the funniest people in the fucking world because it's always like, you know, that fucking shock.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
But, like, I love Donnie Brasco. Like, love. Like, I think it's one of the best. And I think the reason I like it is because it doesn't glamorize being in the mafia. You know what I mean? Like, they show the guy who's like, yeah, it's hard. It's hard to pay the bills, but he's like, you know, doing all this shit. So I wanted to know, like, what was like the non-glamorous side of, like, living that lifestyle? Were there times where you were like, yo, this like the bad parts?
Well, really a lot of it, because the difference between my life and The Sopranos was that Tony Soprano was making, I think, a lot more money than, you know, my family was. A lot of the mafia, especially in the era that I was growing up in, because the FBI was clamping down, because it was being glamorized by Goodfellas, by The Sopranos, by so many things. So they were really, you know, cracking down on it, and just regular street crime was taking over. So we weren't rich. That's the thing. Like, I was kind of jealous of you guys when you got a new Pathfinder, or you like had these things, because it's like, man, I never, my dad never had somebody so in debt that he got their Pathfinder or whatever it was, the little yellow Nissan or whatever. And, you know, it wasn't that glamorous, but the things that ran true were the food was amazing. It was, you know, a little bit more exciting. You know, some months were better than others. Mm. Some days the news was good, you know.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, but it wasn't anything like, it was more like that, you know, that it was real. Yeah. It was gritty.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that, we weren't rich at all, not even remotely close. My mom always made sure that I had new shoes and that we had HBO for some reason. I've never really figured that out, but thank God.
Priorities.
Yeah.
My grandmother would order HBO the day before Sopranos started and cancel it the day. She was so like uptight about it that like, the second the finale ended, like she wouldn't call somebody and be like, can you believe this happened? She would go right, be waiting right for the phone to call up to cancel HBO.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing.
What did you think the ending was?
Well, I mean, I'm pretty positive of it. I mean, it's not great. I don't think, I think it was, you know, as scary as it seems. I think it kind of puts a ribbon on everything that family and everything was such a big part of the show, him trying to solve his problems, him trying to keep it away from the kids. It's a scary thought to think that it ends with him getting shot in the head in front of his family by some, you know, retaliation of someone or something. But it's definitely what it seems like, the way that it's shot and the trickiness of it, the guy and the gun in the bathroom theory makes all the sense in the world. And it's kind of sad to think about, but why else wouldn't they show us? You know, you can't show that scene, obviously. You can't show you two covered in blood and Carmela losing her fucking mind.
See, I disagree. I think that's what everyone wanted to see, and that's why David didn't show it. Like, I think
that's what happened.
Right. But I'm saying David constantly would say, like, he doesn't want to give the people, like, if everybody's like, where's the Russian guy? He's like, I'm not going to answer. Like, whatever they want. And then once people stop asking about him, then I would do it. And I think everybody wanted to see Tony, like, wanted an answer. They wanted to see Tony get killed. And like you said, it was 15 years ago, 20 years ago, where they would show it if they, I mean, they showed a guy get his head run over by a fucking car. Like, I think they easily would have showed it, but I also think that David wasn't sure that he was fully ending it.
Right.
But I think now he's come to that conclusion. Yeah. I don't think that it was necessarily over when it was over.
Yeah.
You know, I think he wanted to leave it open.
I think it's brilliant no matter what.
Yeah.
Any way you slice it, it's genius. And I would have loved to have seen Carmela's reaction to that, Edie Falco. She, in that show, I mean, again, you guys haven't seen it, so it's nuts. But like when Tony's in the hospital and the doctor, you know what I'm talking about? And the doctor goes, you know, I don't know. We'll just see. And she has this crying scene by herself that it's one of the only, I think it is the only thing in all of cinema or television history that like, if I stare right at it while it's happening, it just absolutely it's nuts. It is.
She's a 10 out of 10.
Oh my
like there's
God.
No.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
She effortlessly embodies
and
the
I
story.
Mean it's like it's Daniel Day-Lewis, it's Gary Oldman-esque, like, and I don't even know if there, I don't know if I know of another female that in the history of my life that has moved me the way that she does in that show.
Wow.
Powerful stuff.
Yeah.
Well, listen, thank you. We appreciate you this coming was so much. So awesome. And you're always welcome.
There's love it. We'll do more. Let's do more.
Absolutely. Whenever you want to come, we'll come see you.
You've probably made so many people happy that you made us talk about it so much. But
heck yeah.
Thanks for giving it a 5-star review.
My pleasure. You guys are my long lost brother and sister that I haven't gotten to meet before. So exciting stuff.
Yeah. Thank you. And we'll see you guys soon.
See you next time.